Welcome to Metaphysical Soul Speak. I'm your host, Elena Fox Starks. Hey guys, I hope you're having a lovely weekend. I slept and slept. I am kind of a little bit disoriented because of it. I slept so long. I mean, apparently I needed it, but like 13 hours again. So I slept all that time and I only remember two of my dreams. Usually I remember all of them, but I had a dream that I ran into a little boy, a little blonde haired, blue eyed boy who was very precocious. He's about 8 years old and he was lost in the marketplace. And he came up to me and he said, "Hi, my mom and dad left me and I'm all alone and I need your help." I'm like, "Well, let's find your mom and dad." And he said, "I don't think they want me anymore, so I want you to be my mommy." And he held my hand and he said, "Can I go home with you? I promise to be a good boy. I promise to help out around the house." And he was the most adorable child ever. And I'm like, "Well, you know what? If we don't find your mom and dad, you can go home with me until we find them to see what happened. Maybe you were mistaken." And he said, "Okay." And he hugged me and he held my hand. And then I woke up from the dream. So I looked up, I'm going to do an episode on dream analysis. I've written a 360 page book on dream analysis, but I wanted to see in other cultures what a child in your dream means. And there's good and bad meanings depending on the tone of the dream. And this one is a light, bright, happy energy. And he was so happy to see me. And a child that brings happiness represents a project that you're doing. So I think this means that I'm enjoying doing my podcast. So my podcast is my my sweet little blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. that's my podcast in my dream, is this sweet little child who will help me out around the house. How adorable, right? And then I had another dream, went back to sleep. I had another dream that a cow, a red-haired, reddish-blondish red cow with big brown eyes, one day just walked in my door. I was living in a house that I don't recognize while I'm awake. But she just wandered in, and she wasn't overly fat. She wasn't skinny. She was just a respectable cow, just a normal cow. And she belonged to no one. It was like she was her own cow person. And she came into my house, and all she wanted was to live with me. Another thing like that, right? I'm like, "Wow." And she put her head on me, and I just gave her a lot of love. And I did not demand anything of her. I did not ask her for milk or anything that would be typical of what you think of a cow. I invited her to come and live in my house, and she sometimes would just lay next to my bed with her head on my bed, and sometimes she would take up my entire living room couch, which was in the same room because I lived in a really small house. It was almost like a tiny house in my dream. I have no idea where it was at. It wasn't in Ecuador, but it was a very weird dream. And after 3 nights of giving her love and affection and feeding her and taking care of her like she was a decent, like, good friend, she turned into my twin flame. I'm not saying he's a cow. I'm not saying he's a girl. But I thought it was very interesting. She became my man, my dream man. Again, I didn't see his face, but I saw that he had brown eyes and dark hair, but not the red hair that she had had. But she was almost like testing me, like she was in disguise, and she was testing me. And I think that was like the divine feminine in my twin. It was such a strange dream. I don't know, dreams are very weird and very fascinating, but he became my twin and he was happy. I treated him like a respectable guest of honor, even though he appeared as an animal. And that I didn't demand anything from him, so he knew we were going to have a good life together. And that was it. I woke up from that dream going, wow, that was so beautiful. Again, the tone was of so much love. I think that love permeates the fifth dimension. So if you don't feel like you're in it, just try to tap into that powerful love energy. So today is a day for another Grandma Marion story, a story that was told directly to me by the late, great Reverend Marion Jones. She was a spiritual teacher. I'm not sure if she was a spiritual master, but she might have been. She never said so, of course. I know, if anything, she was definitely a spiritual saint, which was on the way to becoming a master. She spent her whole life dedicated in service of others and service to God. She ran a church, I believe, in the Santa Clarita Valley in California. She moved. She had dreams of the heavy-duty earth changes that were coming. And even though she was usually good at reading timelines, her husband George also had these dreams. And they took it to mean that God wanted them to move. So they gave up their church. They moved to Kingman, Arizona, and retired. And in their retirement, they engaged in many activities, including obviously meditation. They got involved with local churches and charities, community events, and art. And they started making Hopi Kachina dolls. So I am going to give you a quick background on what the Hopi Nation believes as far as their Kachinas are concerned. And then we will take a break. And when I come back, I will tell you two stories of Reverend Marion Jones and the Hopi Kachinas. And then I'm going to tell you one of my own stories, one of my interactions with the Hopi Kachinas. So first of all, we're going to go into who are the Hopi people. It is believed that the Hopi people have connection to the Aztec people in Mexico, but the Hopi Nation, the Hopi tribe, currently, they're still around. They live in the Southwest Pueblo nations in the United States, and they live in Arizona. The Hopi language that they speak is one of 30 languages that are in the group of languages known as the Uto-Aztecan. Aztecan, as you recall, comes from Aztec, or as you may realize, I suppose, Aztec of the northern part of Mexico, was once ruled by the great Aztec Empire. And then south of them would be the Mayan Empire. And in South America, where I live, this land was ruled by the Inca Empire at one time. So the Hopi natives are very profound, deeply spiritual people. The word Hopi itself means peaceful or the polite people. They're very gentle, very loving, and peaceful people. They are very, very connected to the land and to their ancestors. The Hopi Kachinas are spirits, they're ancestor spirits that have become gods. They come back to help protect the tribal people that are currently living. And so they are appearing in their spirit form to the people, and when they appear in their spirit form to the people, they don't look like people anymore. Or they do look like people, but people in costumes, so that their faces are not very recognized. They live in the San Francisco Mountains in Arizona. The spirits live there. That is what is believed, that they live up in the mountains, and during certain ceremonial times, they will come and surround the people. Sometimes they're seen, sometimes they're heard or felt. Their presence is felt. Sometimes they're heard, but they're always there to protect. Now, as a result of their deep connection and love and profound respect for their ancestors and the, you know, the Kachinas, the spirits, the Hopi people create dolls. They carve them out of the cottonwood tree, and they're not dolls to be played with, although the littlest kids sometimes will be given a very simple doll, a Kachina doll made of the cottonwood, and the faces and stuff will be painted onto the wood, so they're not small parts that the little ones will chew on or eat or choke on. But the greater majority of the Kachina dolls are they're made with feathers and leather and beads sometimes, and they're very elaborate. In the 1800s, the first dolls from the Hopi people that we are aware of are now in museums. They were from the late 1880s, and they are pretty simple compared to the dolls that you'll find today. If you went down to the Pueblo Nations, you'll find many a gift store with the Kachina dolls. You could purchase them if you want, and they're very bright, very colorful, very intriguing, fascinating. There's like a deep mystical quality to them, and a lot of people, a lot of tourists love these dolls, and they purchase them. But in the traditional native way, the Kachinas that come to you as a gift that are unasked for, those are the ones that will have the most meaning for you and the most power in your life, and they're the ones that would truly protect you. So if you're given a Kachina doll, that is a very special and very sacred blessing. When I was with my late husband, who passed 10 years ago, no, 8 years ago, in 2010, 8 and a half years. He got a call out of the blue from a cousin he had not seen since he was a little boy. They used to play together every summer. You know, they'd always have family time, you know, like reunions, and, you know, they really always had a lot of fun, but they grew up and kind of lost touch, and he never thought about it. He thought he never really had much in common with her. And out of the blue one day, she calls us, and she said, "I have boxes and boxes and boxes of Kachina dolls I would like to give you." And these were really old, old dolls. I mean, they were probably worth, if we were going to sell them, they were probably worth between $1,500 and $2,500 each. And she gave us like 30 or something. It was a lot. But we would never think of selling them because we have respect and honor for the Hopi Nation and also for the Kachina spirits. So we said, yeah, we will be their protectors and we will love them and give them a good home. So we drove all the way to LA, 12 hours. It's 12 hours because we had little kids and we had to stop many, many times, many bathroom breaks and couple meal breaks. Which is how it goes. You travel a lot slower. You enjoy the journey a little bit more, hopefully, when you have little kids. And we got down there. We got the boxes of Kachinas. And we came back home and we found places on all of our shelves. We made sure they were dusted off. We welcomed them into our home. We burned sage. We played Native American flute music from the Pueblo Indians that we, you know, natives that we just happen to have in our home. And we found good homes for a couple of the Kachinas. We gave a star Kachina to my friend Amber, my good friend Amber, because she has been an astrologer for most of her adult life and she is excellent at what she does. And she has a business, Stars in Your Eyes, out of Ojai, California right now. She's really good at what she does. She'll match you with your perfect mate based on astrology, and she's good. She's scared me with her ability. And I know it was really nice living with the Kachinas. I felt the energy and the power. We had the Eagle Kachina and the Crow Mother. We had a lot of them, and they were just so special. Very special living with this energy. I felt very high vibe. We have the Sun Kachina. The Sun Kachina is known as Tawa. That is the name in the Hopi language, Tawa. And he is also called the Sun Shield Kachina. And he is a sun god. He is the creator of all of the Hopi people. He is sometimes pictured or created with a flute in his hand. And what I suspect this means, I've never read this anywhere, but what I suspect is that creation was made via the vibration of sound. And that is why he carries a flute. Now, at this time in the Hopi Nation, we are in the time of the Bean Planting Festival, which I did not know until I started doing my research today. So the Bean Planting Festival in the Hopi Nation is a positive and joyous time, and it takes place over 8 days in which all of the people in the three parts to the Hopi Nation, they get up early in the morning, and they together literally plant beans, and they have a festival, and they have parades, and it's a time of great joy. And the ceremony, the bean planting festival ceremony, is called the Powamo ceremony. And during the Powamo ceremony time, and at other times and other ceremonies during the year, the people of the Hopi Nation are awakened by the Talavai Kachinas, or the Hopi Morning Singers. They wake everyone up in the village early in the morning by singing to them awake. They're known to stand on top of the houses of the Hopi people and sing to them gently and sweetly as to wake them up. They are pictured, and sometimes people make costumes and in the ceremonial parade. So when you see them dressed in the kachina costumes of the Talavai, they'll be having like spruce in their hand, like a branch of the spruce tree, which smells really good, and bells, morning bells to wake you up, of course. So we've already talked about Tawa, who is a creator, and we also have the Hano clown. I love the Hano clown so much because he's profane and he's inappropriate and he's crazy and he's funny. And I'm a Heyoka shaman, and a Heyoka shaman is someone who creates laughter and joy and mirth and teaches you valuable lessons through the joy of laughing. And a lot of times I'm inappropriate and I'm aware of that, but that's part of it. And that is what the Hano clown does. The Hano clowns in the ceremonial parades, from what I understand, I've been told by Hopi elders, they will sometimes have like a little skirt, like a kilt, and they will lift it up and they will be naked underneath that. It's extremely profane and it's extremely inappropriate. And it's so wonderful because what the Hano clowns do is they teach the little children in the tribe how not to act. You're never to act like this in polite society. We are the Hopi. You know, that's what they say, basically. We are the Hopi people. This is not how we act. Nobody wants to be a Hano clown, right? Except for the people playing the Hano clown part, of course. So the Hano clowns will go and disrupt the ceremony. They're rude. They're profane. They stick their butts, you know, towards people. They do all kinds of crazy things in the ceremony. And they interrupt. If they get too out of control, you might have a raven kachina come, a man dressed in a raven costume, an all black costume with the raven feathers, and they will whip him with a whip made from the yucca plant to get them in line. And another guard that you will find in the Powamu ceremony and possibly other ceremonies is the Wupamo. The Wupamo kachina is a long-billed kachina, and he is known as a guard. And he stands guard to make sure that everyone is behaving correctly and that they're polite. And they will whip you loudly, very hard, to all the offenders who are not acting polite. And if you happen to have rheumatism, if you have arthritis and you're suffering, the best way to get rid of it is to run up to a long-billed guard, a Wupamo, and say it's in your hip. You pull your pants down a little bit to show your hip, and you shove that towards the guard, who's going to quickly whip the rheumatism out of your body. They cure arthritis by whipping it out of you. There's a lot of fun and joy and laughter and mirth in the Hopi Nation. They have not gotten rid of their ancestral roots and ties, and they've strengthened those bonds and they keep them over the years, and they are still today every bit as in touch as they used to be. Possibly not more, but I know that they still hold sacred beliefs. And I believe I'll probably do another day. I will do something about the Hopi Nation prophecies, because they have all come true and they are accurate and they're very interesting as well. So We have many different kachinas that are famous, and you might have already heard of the Crow Mother and the Hano Clown before. And I know that there's one very special one. God bless him. I love him so much. Coco Pelli. And I have seen Coco Pelli as far down south as Peru, Paracas, Peru. Like way, way south of Lima. I even saw Coco Pelli. Everyone in the world knows him. He was a real man. He had a hunchback, and he was known for his constant flute playing. Coco Pelli is a very magical being. He's a being of light and joy and beauty and dancing, and he's known for dancing and playing his sacred flute to honor the gods. And I'm sure you know Coco Pelli. And he also had wild hair. And you know him as a hunchback flute player with the wild hair. Almost like his hair is represented in pictures and drawings. Almost like it's a mohawk made of dreadlocks. And he's amazing. Now, there are many other kachinas that you can find in the Pueblo Nations. And many of them are based on animals. We have the bear kachina, the crow, eagle, and fox kachinas, the wolf kachina, even a roadrunner kachina, a mouse kachina, and a butterfly. Now, there are over 200 kachinas that have been represented. If you go to a kachina gift shop, you're going to find at least 200 different kachinas, but that's not all there are, because as you realize, they are based on an ancestral spirit. There's a lot of people that have gone on before us, right? So in the Hopi tradition of beliefs, all of the ancestors become deities when they pass away, and as deities, they come back as protector spirits and guides. So there's many, many, many different kinds of kachinas. There are the mud head kachinas, the mud heads. Their heads appear as mud, and they have, their ears are very long, and they're red, like the color of the dirt. It has a lot of iron oxide in it in that part of the world. And the mud heads don't yet generally have, they're just, their heads are only mud. They don't generally have feathers or decoration. So they're just very varied, so many different ones. A lot of them are decorated with eagle feathers. There's the crow feathers, and there's even the red-tailed hawk kachina. He doesn't appear except one time a year in a ceremony that is called the Pachavu, which is a history of the Hopi tribal people. And the Hopi Nation believes in remembering their history, so once a year they engage in the Pachavu ceremony, in which the chief kachina or the red-tailed hawk kachina will appear. The world's guardian spirit, the one who guards everybody in the whole wide world, not just the Hopi Nation, but who guards all the nations of the world and all of us. His name in the Hopi tradition is Masaw, M-A-S-A-W, Masaw. So I'm going to stop now. We're going to take a little break. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you two amazing Reverend Marian Jones stories, and I hope you enjoy. So take a break for a couple minutes and then come back and get settled in. I'll be right back after this message. Okay, guys, before I get into the Reverend Marion Jones Kachina story, I did want to report that just northeast of where I live in Cuenca, Ecuador, it was 28 kilometers from here, there was a 5.0 earthquake. I haven't heard any reports on it. It happened at 10:03, and it's almost 11 now. I asked the spirit of the planet if we were going to have another one, and she said no. And so there have not been any aftershocks. I don't know. The earth changes, boy. They're upon us. The last earthquake we had here was more, but here in this area, it was like a 4.8 here in Cuenca, but it wasn't, it was a lot more intense. This one was kind of a shaking, but a more of a gentle shaking. It was enough. I mean, literally I had the phone in my hand. I'm getting ready to record the show. I mean, at 10:02, I was getting everything ready. I sat down and I was getting ready to say the first word, and earthquake hits at 10:03, just like that. I don't know. I don't know if it means anything. But I'm okay. My neighborhood's okay. Everything seems to be okay in Cuenca. In case you happen to know anyone down here or you heard about the report, I don't want you to hear about tomorrow and go, oh, I hope she's okay. I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm like on the third floor of a five-story building. I'm like on the second floor, but you have to go up a whole floor before you can, or go upstairs, a flight of stairs before you can even get, I don't know. It's three flights of stairs to my apartment. So it's a little creepy, but I'm cool. It's a cement building. So it's pretty secure for the most part. But yeah, that was a little disturbing. All right. I have to get in the right headspace, and I'm going to call upon Grandma Marion, Reverend Marion Jones, to come and be with me and help me out so I get the story correct. I was recalling the stories that she told me earlier today, and I was writing down the details because I want to get it right. And then she appeared to me, and I'm like, okay, Grandma, please tell me. And she told me the story, and she's sitting here with me, so I'm hoping she's going to help me, you know, help me. See, she's sitting here in spirit with me. The life of a psychic medium. I know it's strange, but it's just welcome to my world. Anyway, after Reverend Marion Jones and George Jones moved, they retired, and they moved to Kingman, Arizona, and they got very, very interested in the native people in that area. And they weren't that far from the San Francisco mountains. And so they looked into the Hopi Nation. They thought that it was very interesting, the Kachina spirits. And they loved the dolls, and they decided, why don't we make our own? Because in most native traditions, if you are going to have anything of value from the native tradition in your home, you're not going to buy it, you're going to make it. For example, all the fancy dancers in all of the powwows across all of the United States, they don't pay anyone to make their costumes. They have to make it themselves, or they cannot participate in the fancy dance competitions, for example. This is information I got from my dear friend Pamela Jensen, who was a fancy dancer for the Navajo Nation. Even though she grew up in Canada, she was also half Navajo and half, I want to say Ojibwe, but I don't think she was Ojibwe. Her stepfather was Ojibwe. He was a chief of the Ojibwe Nation. But anyway, but she was 50% from one tribe from Canada and 50% Pueblo Nation tribe. She was Navajo, and that's what she told me. She said, oh no, we're not. It's strictly forbidden. You cannot buy any of your costume. You can't pay anyone to make it. You can't buy an old costume from someone else. It has to be something you created yourself, because you have to earn the right to dance. And it's no different with anything else. You have to earn the right. You know, like, you could go and buy a kachina in your house, you know, for your house, but it's better if you make it, or if it's gifted to you. You will have the blessing of the kachina spirits more if you invite them in a polite and beautiful way into your life and in your home. If you just buy them that someone else made, even though you're giving someone money who is a great artist, it's still kind of not really considered traditional. So, Reverend Marion Jones and George Jones set up a table, and they got all the parts and the pieces of things, you know, the feathers, and they had the paint, and they were carving kachinas. You have to carve them out of wood, out of cottonwood. So they had just sat down, and they had been working for 2 hours, maybe. So, yeah, Grandma Marion says about 2 hours. They were carving their kachinas, and they were starting to take shape and start to look like kachinas, when all of a sudden, they swirled in. Okay, yeah. So all of a sudden, the four kachina spirits appeared in their home. And they, like, swirled in, almost like a tornado. So it's like color, light, energy, just a swirl of color, light, and energy suddenly appeared in their house. And then, boom, they solidified. And there were four kachinas standing in the room with them. They stopped what they were doing, put down the carving tools, and just kind of looked like, oh, you know, like, what do, right? If that's a situation, imagine you're sitting there, you're making the art from a culture not your own. And this, and a couple, and several spirits just arrive. So the spirits, the kachina spirits appeared. There were four kachinas. The first, the one that stood in front of the others, was the great Tawa himself, the sun god, the creator, the sun kachina. Out of the four, he was the only one that spoke. And the second one, let's see. Was it the eagle? You didn't recognize him. Okay, yeah. Grandma Marion said she didn't recognize the second one that stood at his side. And she couldn't tell if it was a female or male kachina. But behind them, more towards the door, stood two kachinas that were guard kachinas, taking care of the sun god while he came to see what was happening, basically. And he put his hand, he outstretched his hand and put his hand on Grandma Marion's right shoulder. And she said it felt warm, and they were solid. They weren't see-through. It wasn't like, you know, when I see someone that's in spirit form, it's, I see them in my mind's eye when I close my eyes, but with my physical eyes, I don't see them. Sometimes I'll make out like a vibration or an energy, like a quick little, almost like a mirage on a road type of energy, like a wisp of smoke, but I never see physical form. They saw them in physical form. They appeared to them in physical form. So he put his hand gently on Grandma Marion's shoulder, but he addressed George and he spoke. He said, "What is the meaning of this?" And Grandma Marion answered. She just blurted out, "We're making Kachina dolls." You know, and pretty much that was it. That's all she said. And he turned and he looked at her. And he said, he turned and looked at her, and then he turned and looked at George again. And he said, "But you are a white man." And George said, "Yes, but we have a great deal of love and respect for the Hopi Nation and your spiritual traditions." He said, "Yes, but do you have permission?" And Grandma Marion, oh, she was flustered and so embarrassed. No, how? She's like, "Oh, we didn't know we had to ask permission. We're so sorry." And he just kind of looked at her for a minute and said, and just kind of nodded, you know, listening. And she said, "Do we have permission?" And he said, "Yes, you have my permission." And he said, what is the purpose of your creating the Kachina spirit dolls?" And George answered and said, these are just for us. It's just because we love your traditions. You know, we want to make the dolls in honor of the land we live on and to remember that the Kachinas are all around us." And, you know, kind of gave an explanation kind of along those lines. And the Kachina Tawa, he seemed happy with this. He seemed satisfied with the answer. And so he took his hand off of Grandma Marion's shoulder and they all gave a nod and they swirled away again in a tornado of color and light and energy, soundless though. And even though it appeared as a tornado, it didn't move any papers or anything in their home. Nothing moved except for the Kachinas themselves. So it didn't provide any wind. It didn't create any wind. And after that, they were terribly embarrassed. They were like, "Wow, you know..." they were only doing it for themselves. They weren't doing it to make a buck. They weren't trying to sell it. They, you know, it was just, you know, something to do. They're retired. And they wanted to learn more about the Kachinas. And they felt like they can learn more by actually making one themselves. And it would have more meaning. And they were creating their own art for themselves. For no other reason. So, you know, when the spirits appeared before them, they were like, "Whoa, that's pretty intense, man. That's pretty intense." So you have to have utmost respect and permission from the Kachina spirits themselves, from the chief, from the Sun Kachina, the god, the sun god, the creator, Tawa. Now, 10 days went by, and they were busy working on their Kachinas. They were close to being finished, actually. They were just putting on, you know, painting the last little bit of paint and gluing the last bit of, feathers on their Kachinas. And George was making the image of the Crow Mother, and her name in Hopi is Angus Nasomtatka. And he was making the Crow Mother, and Grandma Marion was making the Eagle Kachina. And the Eagle Kachina is a man, and the Crow Mother is a woman. And they were almost done. They were at the very end, and they were very busy. And you know, when you're doing any kind of intense art, and you have your head down and the light is shining on what you're doing and you're focused really hard, and you get so focused that you can't hear anything around you, and you kind of tune out everything around you. You don't hear anything, you don't see anything. So they're sitting there and they're making the kachinas. They're almost at the end, and boop. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, boop, just like that. You know, there's no sound, though. I'm making the sound. The sound didn't exist, but the chief kachina, also known as a red-tailed hawk kachina, and the Crow Mother herself appeared. Just boop, they were standing right there. Standing right there. And they were and George and Marion noticed them. And just kind of startled them, and they just stopped what they were doing. And they put their kachinas down, and they looked at them. And the kachinas just kind of looked at them, looked at George and Marion. And the red-tailed hawk kachina, when he appeared, Grandma Marion told me that he had bells on his knees, and he had red wings, and like a white kilt and a red sash. And that's the way he appeared to her. And the Crow Mother appeared the way that you would see a Crow Mother kachina. She has a turquoise head, or what would appear to be like a helmet, with two downward facing black triangles, one on top of the other, but still touching. And that's, she always appears like that. And she has feathers, of course. And she's got black feathers, and black and white feathers, but mostly, you know, black. But that's how they appeared. And the red-tailed hawk kachina had brown and red, reddish, but natural red, not like bright red, not like a commercial red, but, you know, like an actual red-tailed hawk. And it's important to note at this point that the chief kachina, or the red-tailed hawk kachina, he is a protector of important sacred cat semen. Not cat semen. It's going to bring out my Hano clown part of me. It's cat semen, which is the name of kachinas when there's more than one. So the red-tailed hawk kachina is important. He is the protector of all the sacred kachinas. And as a protector, he came to check up on their work. So now apparently Tawa has been, you know, telling the red-tailed hawk kachina, the sun kachina told the red-tailed hawk kachina, go check on their work. It's been 10 days. They were still working on it. And here they come to check up on their work. This is real. This is serious business. And again, the Crow Mother and Red Tail Hawk Kachina, they appeared as solid as you or me. They were just solid in the room, just like that. They weren't see-through. They weren't spirit or floaty or ghosty-like. They were just like people in costumes. So the Crow Mother nodded gently and approvingly, very sweetly, and said nothing. The only kachina that spoke this time, once again, only one speaks, and he said, how's it coming along? He said to Marion. And she said, I think it's going really well. And so he reached over and he picked up the kachina. And at the same time, the crow mother reached over and picked up the representation of herself that George was making. And she inspected it gently, turned it over, and made sure all the markings were correct and that everything was fine. And she said no words. She just nodded approvingly, very lovingly and gently, and she put down the kachina in front of him, like she approved. But she said no, nothing. And the red-tailed hawk kachina, however, when he reached over and he picked up the equal kachina that Grandma Marion had been creating, he says, "I want to make sure we're represented correctly." And he's looking over everything. And he looked under the kilt. And when he looked under the kilt, he saw that Grandma Marion basically had made him like a, or made the kachina like a Ken doll. It's the only way I can say it, like a Ken doll. A Ken doll is void of all genitalia. And he kind of was shooken by that a little bit. And he said, "Where's the dick?" She's like, "Excuse me?" He's like, "We have to be represented correctly. Do you think we have no dicks? We're men. We were men." He was really insulted. "Where is the dick?" You know? And she's like, "You mean you want me to put a penis on my doll underneath his skirt?" And he's like, "Yes. It has to be correct. It has to be accurate. It has to show us as we were. And you have to make it big." And oh, Grandma Mary told me she grew like 10 shades of red. She was so embarrassed. She didn't know what to do. She had no idea. She had never looked under the skirt of a kachina doll. She never thought to. It was kind of disrespectful. And the Hopi, then the word Hopi means peaceful and polite people. So she was, oh my God. Oh, she was so embarrassed. And he was laughing at her. He laughed out loud, this big booming laugh. And make it big. It has to be correct. And he said, "You're making the equal kachina. When you make my kachina doll, make mine double the size." And they all laughed. The crow mother, everyone laughed. George laughed, Marion laughed, they all laughed. That was hilarious. And and she said, "Okay, I will fix it. I promise you, I assure you, I will carve out a big one and you will have genitals. I'll make a penis, it'll be fine." And they all laughed, and he says, "In that case, I approve." And just like that, boop, they were gone. Not in a swirly tornado. They didn't like shrink down to nothing and disappear. It wasn't a flash of light. There was no smoke. It was just, they were there and then boom, next second gone. Just like that. And that was it. And she's told me, I mean, every time Grandma Marion would tell me these stories, and she'd tell my husband, Terrell and I, she would tell us, we would just be like sitting on the floor sometimes, you know, and just in awe, like we couldn't, almost like we couldn't even speak. And I know our mouths were like open, mouths agape, jaws dropping practically on the floor, because she spoke so naturally and freely, you know, about all these things. And it just, her life was so incredible. And that's why I'm telling you guys another every Saturday, I'm going to give you guys another Reverend Marion Jones story until I run out. I have about another month and a half left of Mother or Reverend Marion stories, because she wanted me to write her story and I didn't get to. And the only way I can honor her is to bring up her stories, and her spirit comes and is with me while I'm telling them to you. So I hope that you enjoy my Reverend Marion stories. She was an amazing woman. And she's a soulmate to me. I've known her for many lifetimes. So that's that for my Reverend Marion story. But I do have one last Kachina story for you. Not of a doll, but of an actual Kachina spirit that I saw with my own eyes. So I'm going to take a quick break and I'm going to come back with my Kachina story. What sparked Grandma Marion telling us the stories of the Kachinas in the first place was I had my own Kachina experience. My husband and I were on our way to see Grandma Marion. We were going to go spend a weekend with her. We did this often. And we were kind of near the Grand Canyon on the way to her house, and he said, you know, I want to go to the Grand Canyon with you. And he just turned down the road to go towards the Grand Canyon, but it was nighttime. The park was closed. There was no way for us to get in or anything. We couldn't even see anything. We saw a little bit of it, but it was, you know, the moon was pretty bright, but I don't think it was a full moon, but it was almost. I think it was a waxing moon that night. And it was pretty late. And we were going to go get, you know, like a hotel or a motel, I think in Flagstaff, and then go see Grandma Marion the next day. I think we stayed for 2 days and then went to Grandma Marion's the next day and kind of made it like a 5-day thing. But we're driving down the road. He goes, I can't stand it. I want to go near the Grand Canyon. It's so beautiful and it's peaceful and it's an energy that you don't really experience anywhere else. And with this, I agree. I agree with him. And while we were going down the road, we saw a coyote. We saw an owl. We saw a dead snake, which was so sad. I don't like seeing the dead snakes. The road is hot in the day and the snakes go there to get warm and they lay there and they get run over by cars. So it's very sad. But we were just seeing all these animals. It was just amazing. We saw a deer. And it kind of started to run out in front of the road and then it kind of ran back. And so we were like, wow, we got to be careful here. This is, you know, we don't want to hit an animal, you know, just while going down this road, because it was late. It was late at night, you know, maybe 10 o'clock at night, maybe, you know, closer to midnight even. And I saw something and it looked like a deer standing there. And I told him, I said, hey, I think I see something way up there on the road to the left. And you got to watch out, you know, just in case it's a deer, in case it gets confused and darts out in front of the car. You got to make sure. So he said, okay. And he slowed down. He slowed down because he wanted to be able to stop in a hurry if he had to. And as he was going, we were still talking and whatever. And then we got real quiet, kind of contemplating something. And he wasn't really looking and he didn't see it, but I saw what looked like two deer ears standing up, and I wanted to see it. I was curious, like normal. So as we drove by it, I looked, and as I looked, it was not a deer, but rather two eagle feathers sticking up to look like deer ears. And there was a kachina. He was a kachina, and his head was like a kind of like a tan brown, not at all like a mudhead, but he was tan brown, and it was very plain. And his eyes was one eye, and it was a slit, and it looked like he had a helmet on, and it was a slit all the way across, like one black dark slit, and I could not see inside, but it was just black. It was jet black on top of this tan, and I don't recall that he had a mouth or a nose at all, just this slit. And he was wearing I think just like a kilt, and but it was tan, not white. It was very much blended into the environment, and his skin was I don't think he had a shirt on. It was just, you know, just a bare chested, and he had like some like leather across his chest. But I didn't really see that. It was hard to see because it was dark. But the moon was out, and the moon was shining on his helmet, on his head. And as we went by, his arm went up because he saw me, and his right hand went up, almost like he was going to wave, but not quite. It didn't go all the way up. He kind of like brought it up to his side, and his head turned, so that slit part of the helmet was like looking at me, and as we went by him slowly, he turned and looked at me, and I felt it like we had a connection. There was like a spiritual connection, and I was a little scared, because I mean, at first I was like, what's that, an alien? What the hell did I just see? I did not know much about the Hopi Kachinas when this happened. This is what sparked my lifelong love of the Hopi Kachinas. Was when I saw one in real life, and the first thing I thought was, oh, it's like an alien or something. But then the eagle feathers, and that kind of confused me, and the kilt and the whole thing. It was just, I think he had an arrow in his hand, like a bow and arrow, or like the bow part. I think I saw like a bow, and it might have been a bow and an arrow in his hand. He wasn't getting ready to shoot anything. He just had it in his hand, in his right hand, the hand that he brought up. And it was just so fast. It was so rapid. Like, it just happened so like, oh, whoa, like, whoa. And then right when I was about to say what it was, he turned into a deer and ran across the road behind our car as we're moving forward. He moved along from left to right. And he just ran into like a field of corn. And this is very late, so it's not a person dressed like this. I mean, if it was a person, they might have actually waved. But we were not on native land. But it was next to the San Francisco Mountains. You know, it was next to there. And it was, you know, just north of Flagstaff. I think it was north of Flagstaff, but kind of between Flagstaff and the Grand Canyon Park, National Park. And it just sparked something in me. I was just like, okay. Let me explain what I just saw. Like, I was really scared, but excited, but at the same time, what the heck was that? And as I explained it to Terrell, he said, you know, you've just had an experience. You just had a spiritual experience with an ancestor of the Hopi. That was a Kachina spirit. And but it looked solid. It looked solid. Like if I got out of the car, I could shake his hand and touch him like I could touch you if you were in the room with me. It was like so real. It wasn't. And then when he turned into a deer, it was just like in a heartbeat. It was in a nanosecond. Like there was no swirly energy. There was no flash of light. There was nothing that looked supernatural. He was a man, and then he was a deer. And then he ran across the road. And when I explained it to Terrell, Terrell's like, oh, wow. You know, we need to talk to Grandma Marion about it. So that's what sparked this whole thing. I mean, Grandma Marion's like, well, I've got a couple of my own experiences with the Hopi Kachina. They're very, very real. And they can appear to you. They're going to only appear to you if, you know, it's kind of one of those things. If you're pure of heart. You know, if you're a true, like, spiritual seeker, they're not going to appear to you if, you know, you're just kind of messing around with your life. But when you're on the spiritual path, they will appear to you, especially if you have respect for their tradition and their culture. And they may appear to the Hopi people themselves more often, but I was shocked. I mean, I knew at the time that I had Native blood. I did not know what tribe, but I knew I wasn't Hopi. I had a feeling I was not Hopi. And I was right. Actually, I'm Cherokee. Turns out I'm Cherokee. I always thought maybe I was Shoshone. You know, the snake people from the Wyoming area. Because they're known to have red hair and pale skin. And I thought, oh, I must be Shoshone then. But I still wasn't sure. But I've had connections to the Lakota people and the Chumash people and the Pacific Northwest tribes. I mean, I feel a connection to many different tribes. But I never had a connection one way or the other. I had no feelings one way or the other for the Hopi people. I'm always interested in learning more and more. I had taken a class in which I learned about the Zuni people and the Navajo Pueblo people, but and a little bit about the Hopi, but I had taken Native American studies classes and Native American history, Native American art. And in the art class, I had learned about the art from the Navajo and the Zuni tribe, which is pretty cool. I mean, I've gone into antique stores, even in California, and well, you know, you guys are not selling that for what it's worth. That's a $10,000 basket. You know, like there was a piece of art, it's actually a piece of pottery. And I knew, I'm like, this is worth a lot because I know the artist has died and she was the most famous artist, Maria. And I just knew her art because I'd just seen so much documentaries and in my books and everything. I knew about her. But so that's my experience. I hope you guys enjoyed hearing about my Kachina story. I mean, it's something that's always been in the back of my mind. I want to go back and I want to just see if I could see more, if I could go and pray and meditate, maybe with the Hopi people someday and learn more, because I would love to meet more of the Kachinas. They're very, very special, deep, powerful spiritual energy. When I saw him standing there, I felt like I'm in the presence of a sacred being. And then right after, I got scared. Just like when same thing when I met an anaconda snake, a huge snake in the Amazon region. When I was in his presence, I had nothing but reverence and love and respect. And then afterwards, after I left the jungle, I was terrified. Why was I near the snake? Why did I pick it up? Why was I loving it? Why was I kissing it? Why was I making eye contact with this thing that could have killed me? Like, it's like when you're in the moment, when you feel this powerful presence, you're just in so much awe that all your faculties aren't with you. And until later, and you're like, oh my gosh, was that an alien? Was that, what did I just see? What was that? So that's how I was with the Kachina. Like I thought, oh my gosh, was I abducted? Are we missing time? Should we go back? Should we look for him? Should we get the hell out of here? What do we do? But as long as I live, I will never forget what that face looked like. And to be honest, there are hundreds of Kachinas, possibly thousands. This one I've never seen in a gift store. I've never seen this one anywhere. Not in drawings, not in paintings, not in stories. You know, and I've looked up Dear Kachina, and I think that there was one. It looks nothing like what I saw. But his cover was to turn into a deer and run off. Which is weird. Like, if he's a spirit, why didn't he just turn into nothing? Why didn't he just boop out? Boop, he's gone. But I don't know. Weird, wild, wonderful stuff. So, that's it. That's all I got. That's all I got for you guys today. I will definitely be back tomorrow with another episode of Metaphysical Soul Speak. I'd love to hear from you guys if you want to send me any messages or anything at all. Ideas for shows, comments, a shout out to your twin flame, anything you want. I'd love to start the conversation. I'd love to hear from you guys. Send me a message at anchor.fm/metaphysical with a capital M. And I'd love to hear from you. But right now, until next time, I am signing off with peace and joy and the high vibes of the Holy Fifth Dimension. Metaphysical Soul Speak is run on sponsors and listener support. This means listeners like you. If you are so inclined to support my efforts and my little podcast, please visit me at anchor.fm/metaphysical and pledge an amount of your choosing today. Thank you.